From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made with endings and beginnings and somewhere in between all of this living. Those are the words of City Magazine editor Leah Stacey. The December issue of this magazine is her seventh, and the title of her editor's note this month is The Year in Review. And believe it or not, it's December. The year's winding down. This hour is our monthly look at the current issue of City Magazine. This is the last one of the year, of course, and there's a lot to talk about. We will explore those beginnings, endings, and some of that living that Leah mentioned, how one man is using his art to pay it forward, how a local culinary expert is bringing her talents directly to homes, a curator marking his own new beginnings by celebrating hip-hop's impact on culture, and kind of celebrating the end of the year with spiritless cocktails. I love that idea. So a lot to talk about in this issue and in this hour. Welcome, Leah Stacey, editor-in-chief of City.
Hi.
Nice to have you back here.
I know. It feels like I was just here.
It always feels like it's
a whirlwind.
The months fly by, don't
yeah.
they? Yeah. And Ryan Williamson, Director of Strategy and Operations for City. Hello, sir.
Hi.
Nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me back.
Can I ask both of you, I mean, this is the time of year, and maybe listeners can weigh in a little bit. We're always debating, do communities want end of year in review? I kind of think they do. I think it can be trite, but I also think it can be really profound to take stock of what has changed in a year, what has opened, what has closed, what has come and gone, what has happened to change culture in communities and in powerful and profound ways. And so I do think it is valuable. I think it can be done in kind of silly and trite ways, but I also think it can be really, really powerful. So I'm a fan of this kind of an approach, and I just want to hear your thoughts as an editor when you think year end here.
Yeah, so I guess we went for a non-traditional approach to that. I mean, this theme in-house was loosely our winter guide. We don't want to really focus on the holidays per se. We will acknowledge them, but, you know, it's a tricky time for some people. And so winter is something we all have in common here. Mm-hmm. And it kind of kicks off in real force in December. Well, although we'll see. But we had, I guess, a thread throughout all of these stories of giving back to the community in some way. And if you do go through and flip through each page and each story, you will see that that theme is pretty prevalent. So when I sent out the call for pitches to our writers and our photographers, that was one thing that I was like, you know, we want to emphasize this. This is a great time of year to think about giving back. Any time of year is, really. But this is a time when it's especially pronounced. It, you know, needs and wants and the ways that we can give back to specifically our community.
How do you feel about it, Ryan?
Leah says in her note here, time to turn the page. So I think it's a great way to retrospect the year and move on. You know, even if you're not someone that likes to look back, helps you move forward.
Leah, are you like me? Like, do you have like a sad song playlist sometimes that you just rely on?
You already know the answer to that.
Of course you do. Sometimes, this is the time of year where sometimes I like the low lighting and, you know, the early sunset, and I get a little contemplative.
Yeah, I think I have a Phoebe Bridgers playlist right now that's like Phoebe Bridgers, but you're sad. And I was like, well, it's kind of already sad. It's getting sadder. It's gray. This is not to say I don't like happy music, but sometimes I do my best thinking when the music is sort of deep and melancholy. My Spotify Wrapped said I was a vampire. I don't know. It gives you like a character at the end, and mine was vampire.
Based
and it was
on the
like
music
you like
listen to?
Yeah, you like dark. And I didn't post this, but Ryan knows and he's smiling because we looked at them at the same time. My top artist was Taylor Swift, and I feel I am disappointed in myself, sort of, for that.
Hold on a sec. I'm kind of surprised at that, but I'm also curious to know why that disappoints
you. I think it's
you.
Because I'm mostly playing music at home through my Sonos, and Spotify's not grabbing that stuff. So it's probably not really Taylor Swift.
But what's wrong with Taylor Swift?
Nothing. I'm not a Swiftie, but I am a fan of her brain and her writing. I wouldn't call myself a Swiftie. I mean, if you read my Taylor Swift Eras review, you would know that I was sort of traumatized by certain parts of that experience. But the sad music.
We're gonna derail
going
the whole
to,
hour.
I really derailed this question. I'd like to pass the mic to Ryan.
Well, I'll one up you because my Spotify Wrapped was taken over by my kids. So it was all Frozen and Disney composers. So nothing cool.
That's very cool, depending on who you are.
How old you are, what grade you're in.
What grade you're in?
Come on, that can be very cool.
Kristen Bell is like in my top five from the Frozen soundtrack.
The dulcet tones of Kristen Bell.
Okay, well, I have no problem with that per se.
Okay.
Are your kids Swifties?
No, they're not old enough yet. So I don't know if she'll still be around when they're really like into music.
Oh,
as
she'll
much
still
as...
be around.
Oh, are you kidding? She's going to keep reinventing, dude.
She's our Madonna.
She's forever.
There'll be somebody new.
You think she's this generation's Madonna?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm derailing it again.
That's great.
It's okay.
I'd like to go on record saying that the Nationals are actually my favorite band. And they should have been number one.
You're looking for some cool cred. You've already torched it.
Well, not really, because that just makes me look like a sad
Taylor
dad.
Taylor Swift vampire.
Yeah. I'm going to see myself out.
She writes her own stuff, which is really valuable for someone who makes as much music as she makes.
Yeah.
She writes her own stuff.
She's a great writer.
So I like that very much. So should we just do Taylor Swift? Let's talk about some other stuff. Before we welcome some guests, let me also mention we can never have a conversation with the folks from City and get to all of the issue. And that's a good thing. And we are going to be working through, you know, big chunks of it here. But for the stuff that we're not going to dive in too deep, I like the idea of 24 bottles of beer on the wall, Leah Stacey. That's Gino Finelli with 24 bottles
of beer.
Yeah,
this started before my time. I think actually Ryan should talk about this one.
Yeah, so our annual Advent calendar, I believe this is the third or fourth year we've done it. Fourth. And the hardest part is that Gino shows up on a Friday morning with 24 beers and decides that we have to photograph them all, crack them open, taste them, and he has to write about them all in a few hours. So with the amount of staff we have up there, it turns into quite a fun afternoon on a Friday.
Yes, I can imagine. Yeah. Daniel Kushner, cycling in the winter. I like that idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't have any snow yet. But,
no.
And it's not even technically winter yet. But this city has become more cycling serious, and yet every time we get to this time of year, we do a show in cycling and people call and they're like, I would never do it. I would never. And
I'm going to be honest. It terrifies me.
I can understand why people
personally, because I don't trust myself on a bike in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. You hit
driving is enough.
Yeah. You hit a nice patch. But Daniel is going to give you a little perspective on cycling in winter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And I have to say, we've talked to Raquel Stephen about the idea of the twin flames, identical twin sisters, working for Rochester Protectives, that's a volunteer force working alongside firefighters to safeguard and salvage property, and they're going to take their physical fitness test to determine their admission to the fire department itself. It's a great story.
It is a great story. That was one that we talked about putting in print because it was so fantastic, and they're just such a standout duo. And I just really like their story. When I was reading it, I was personally inspired. And we wanted to grab that. It ran on the web first, and we wanted to run that in print so that it could reach more people.
Really good. Anything you want to add there?
No, great photos by Max Schulte on that piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, awesome. And I want to welcome our first guests on the line, because Leah Stacey herself penned a piece called Alley-Oop. Adrian Moses Clark is with us, owner of Acts of Kindness. Adrian Moses Clark, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thanks for being with us. And Bridget A. Martin. Bridget is Senior Development Manager for Bavona Child Advocacy Center. Hi, Bridget, thank you for being with us.
Hello, thanks for having me.
If listeners are like, wait a second, what do these two things have to do together? We'll explain in just a moment. You want to tell us about how this story hit your radar, Leah Stacey?
Yeah, so I have a pretty personal tie to Adrian because he actually did my last tattoo, and then I was following his work, and he opened up in May of 2022, he opened up his own shop called Acts of Kindness. And I noticed that when he started promoting it, he was giving back a percentage of all the work done, all the merch sold, gift cards to different nonprofits in the area. So he has been on my list for a little while. We'll run into each other in different places around. And I'm like, I mean, I'm going to call you. We got to do a story about this because I just think it's a wonderful story.
The piece, we're really going to kind of dig into people who love puns, people who are understated and chill. I mean, like the whole vibe, there's a vibe in this piece. What would you say the vibe is of Acts of Kindness?
It's Adrian's vibe. He's like the chillest, coolest guy you'll talk to.
Is that a fair description, Adrian?
I'll say thank you. I feel that I am definitely a little low key, if you will, for sure.
Adrian, how much work are you doing on a given week here? How many inks are you doing?
I would say, I try these days to keep things down to one or two per day. And the pieces are usually a little bit on the larger side for the most part. I do have dedicated walk-in days where things are usually a little bit smaller. And on those days, it can be, anywhere from, 3 to 6, 7 or more.
The piece describes you as someone who, you came here as a kid, literally moving in on ice storm day. what an entrance for a young boy to Rochester. But you're grown up and, school was, I think you said that you're kind of over it and school wasn't taking you down the path you wanted to take. Can you describe what it felt like growing up looking for a path that worked for you, Adrian?
I would say, I didn't feel like, at 18, I don't think a lot of kids know exactly what they want to do. And I just knew I wanted to do something with art. And I feel like I got a good base with that in high school, but then I didn't really feel like I was getting the direction I needed, at least initially. And maybe some of that is just due to taking all the core classes in college. But I kind of just said I would rather strike out and figure out how to move on without it, and continue to make art all the while. And fortunately for me, I had some good people that I ran into and kind of helped cultivate that.
Yeah, Adrian, your story is sort of in the category that I would put. We've talked about Tony Colon from Fuego, who has told us on this program that when he was growing up, he was categorized as like, you're a bad student. Like, there's something wrong with you, as opposed to like, you think differently. Different things turn your brain on. You've got a really creative side to you. How do we fire this? How do we get this moving in a way that allows you to feel like you can engage and be productive? And it took him a while. And of course, Fuego Coffee is an institution. And, Tony, shout out to Tony and the Colon family. I think Tony's doing okay and doing pretty well. But for you, what is the lesson for schools to kind of draw from on stories like this when, you are becoming a pillar of this community, but when you were in your teenage years, the system might have labeled you one way, Adrian?
Yeah. I guess I would say, more than anything, listen to students a little bit. As much as parents have walked the paths that they have walked, adults have walked, it's not necessarily going to be the same path for everyone following behind them. I know in general, the school route was not the greatest for me, despite being actually a really good student. I was always ahead of the class in math. It's just something that kind of didn't speak to me as far as any kind of career or anything. But even so, despite the grades and everything, there were still those teachers and staff who kind of just looked at me one way for whatever reason. And, I feel like I'm probably not the first and probably won't be the last student to kind of feel that way.
Well, and so let's talk about how you ended up kind of connected with Bavona. Before we get there, you got to tell a little bit of the story of how Acts of Kindness came to be, Adrian.
Yeah. So it is kind of, it was sparked more by the pandemic than anything. It's something that was kind of always in the back of my mind to figure out a way to give back. I try to tell people, like, I've done my fair share of complaining about what the wealthy seem to lack the will to do, despite having greater resources than most of us. And I just got to a point where I kind of felt like instead of complaining about what others are not doing with those resources, that I just take the resources that I do have and do what I can, even if it's not as much as I would like to do or would do, you know, if I were considerably wealthier. I do have more than I need. And I can take that and, you know, share what I can and still have a good life for myself, my son, and, you know, everybody else.
We're talking to Adrian Moses Clark from AOK Tattoo, Acts of Kindness. And I'm looking at some of the images here. I'm also drawn to this idea that there are some people who are probably not programmed for body ink, and that may be me. I just might have too much of a fear of it. I've got two people in studio, though, who have more than made, especially Ryan's, more than made up for it. So what I want to ask both of our guests from City and Studio and ask Adrian is, when you are interested in more ink, do you go to like someone like Adrian and say, like what should we do? Or do you come in with an idea? Like, Leah, do you think, like, I know what I want, I'm going to go get it, I'm going to collaborate with somebody? Like, how do you come up with this stuff?
Yeah, I always have an idea. I have to, like, really be committed to the idea. It has to have a sentimental meaning for me. I don't just, like, wake up and I'm like, yeah, today feels like a good day to get a tattoo. And Adrian knows my last tattoo had a lot of sentimental meaning, so I really came in with a story on that one.
Yeah. Adrian, do you have people come in and ask you for ideas, or are they mostly coming in saying, this is what I need?
I would say nowadays, most people kind of have an idea of what they want, and I just kind of use my tools to execute in the fashion that I think fits not only my style, but what they're searching for. And sometimes I'm, you know, not the right style for what it is that they want, and, you know, I happily admit that to them and hopefully point them in a direction where they find someone who does fit their idea a little bit better.
Ryan does strike me as someone who wakes up and is like, yeah, maybe a tattoo today. I mean, you got more than you can count here.
I've actually done it both ways with Adrian. Hey, Adrian.
Yeah. What's going on, Ryan? No,
you know, I've said, hey, I have this idea. I want you to draw something up. And it was great. And I've also walked in and just handed him a drawing and said, I want this. So.
And how does it come out?
Always awesome. It's always a good hang with Adrian.
That's amazing. I mean, it is such a to me, an impressive line of work. And shout out to Rudy. Cool pictures there. Yeah. That are not, they're not going to bother you if you're squeamish about tattoos like me. They're just really good looks at how Adrian's doing the work. Adrian, paying it forward. Why Bavona? Tell me about this partnership.
So Bavona was one of the organizations that I chose just simply on their mission. I think that, and I feel like everybody pretty unanimously will agree, you know, child abuse is something that we would be better done away with. And the fact that they do so much for children who have been in those situations and children who have witnessed violent crimes, you know, it's something that I think is worth supporting, kind of taking care of kids in those situations. I would say that's what kind of drew me to them.
Bridget is the senior development manager for Bavona Child Advocacy Center. Tell us what this partnership has meant to you guys, Bridget.
So Adrian is, I think, as was described earlier, just a really cool, chill guy who he just gets it. And everything that he was describing and in the reasons he is engaged with Bavona and how he conducts himself, you know, as a business person, as a father, as a human being, just aligns so much with the core values and what Bavona is looking to do. So it is absolutely the perfect partnership.
And these kinds of partnerships, you know, I know that there's giving circles and Adrian's been part of that. So you've got individuals who will commit for a 3-year level, sometimes businesses. And can you talk a little bit about how that works, Bridget?
Sure. There are so many ways to engage with Bavona Child Advocacy Center. And one of the ways is our Circle of Hope, and that is our individual giving program, which is exactly as you described. It is a three-year commitment at various levels that individuals choose to donate X number of dollars per year for a three-year period. We also have a corporate program that is at a higher dollar level that oftentimes is connected with events because they're looking to get a little bit more sponsorship value or something like that out of it, and that is a two-year commitment.
Well, Adrian, how long is this commitment? Is kind of indefinite for you?
It is. I feel like, you know, as long as I can keep the shop going, I really am committed to that 10% that I put out across the board. And Bavona, I am happy to have them as one of the mainstays where every single month, you know, some portion of that 10% is going to them.
Well, let me ask just one more question a piece there. Bridget, I mean, no one wants to think too much about this. We all wish Bavona Child Advocacy Center wasn't even necessary, but what has this year been like for your organization? And, you know, what are your biggest needs?
Yeah, thank you for that question. I always use the quote that one of our donors said that Bavona Child Advocacy Center is the greatest organization that shouldn't exist. And we really agree with that. Back in 2019, a law was passed, Aaron's Law, to really get prevention education in public schools. So in the past year, in addition to our intervention services, where we actually see children and families in our facility that really houses 23 of our partner agencies. So really the model is that a child walks through our doors and they get all the services in one place, and that has been proven to reduce trauma for the child. So if the worst thing happens to you and you have to go tell someone, do you want to then tell someone in this building and then go to the police station and then go to the doctor and then go to the DA's office? You don't want to have to do all that, and it just makes it harder for the child. So on average, we see about 2,000 kiddos a year here just for our intervention services. 67% of those, just to give you a really clear picture, are under the age of 12. So the other piece that I can share with you this year in the greater Rochester area, with the prevention education piece, we have empowered 50,000 children and teens in 22 school districts to learn how to protect themselves and protect others. So that is something we are very, very proud of. And we really look at the children. We all know that they're our future, and it's really imperative that we invest in their future so they're resilient and hopeful about what their own future can look like. And a little bit of what Adrian was saying, and you were asking about, like, what can schools do, you know, to look at kiddos, like, not even just with curriculum, like, are there other ways that they can be helping them? And our Child Safety Matters program is so critical now in all the schools to really help kids understand how to keep themselves healthy and safe.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time for us, Bridget. And Adrian, I'll ask you as we close with you. Adrian's the owner of Acts of Kindness, AOK Tattoo. Is it true that more people are looking for ink? Because not that they, you know, want to eventually get anything erased here, but for people who... I was reading a piece, I think, in The Atlantic recently that said the removal process is better than it's ever been, which is actually freeing more people up to go get some ink because they feel like, you know, if eventually things change, it might not feel as permanent. I don't know if that affects your business at all.
I don't know if it affects my business either. People are still getting plenty of tattoos. I try to make sure that I'm applying the ones that they don't want removed.
Yeah, absolutely. And how's business these days?
Business is good. I can't complain. You know, I get to be more selective than when I first started, for sure. And I feel like, I don't know, there's people bring me lots of fun work. I think with social media, people can get a good feel for the style that different artists have. And mine is certainly not an unpopular one. I'm thankful for all the people who do enjoy it and come to collect. And typically they kind of just let me do my thing.
Where do they find you, Adrian?
I am at 258 Alexander Street, Rochester, New York. Here Tuesday through Saturday for the most part. There's little blips here and there because I do coach basketball as well. usually there's someone here to help you.
Adrian Moses Clark, owner of Acts of Kindness. That's A-X-E, Acts of Kindness, A-O-K Tattoo. You're doing great work, and I really appreciate what you're doing and the spirit in what you're doing it, Adrian. Thanks for making time for us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Bridget A. Martin from Bavona Child Advocacy Center. Thanks to your entire organization, Bridget. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
This awesome story, penned by Leah Stacey in the new edition of City Magazine. Yeah, chill was the right word. I feel relaxed. I feel like I'm just sitting with a warm mug of coffee on a cold winter's day and a book. Like I could go hang with him all day.
Ready for your first tattoo?
We have to break. Before we break, let me grab a phone call, and then we're gonna turn to another featured member of our community in this month's city. But Paul in Rochester has been waiting to jump in on one point that we talked about earlier. We mentioned earlier Daniel Kushner is writing about bicycling in winter, and this is Paul in Rochester. Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Hi. I just want to let you know that my son was featured in City Magazine a number of years ago. I was visiting him in Rochester. Anyway, I came upon the newsstand, this magazine, with a bicyclist on the cover, and he was into bicycling, so I got it for him. And I'm perusing through it, and there's a picture of my son in an article partly about him. She was interviewing four different types of bikers, and he was listed as the hipster.
That's a category of bicyclist?
Look. Yeah, I said, so you didn't tell me about this? She said, oh, I forgot about that. And before that time, while he had spent a semester in or a year in Ottawa going to college, and he was doing part-time work as a courier on a bike, a gearless bike. It's one speed. Constantly, but it was on the streets of Ottawa being a courier in the winter. And then he comes home
Ottawa in the winter.
No.
Yeah. Then he comes home for Christmas for Christmas, and he's got his tubes off his tires off his bike. He's inserting screws through them inside out so that the points stick out. He was going to a race on ice in Montreal. That was a group of other couriers got together, and they were going to have this contest. So he's just, whatever he does, he's flat out.
Well, Paul, listen, I love the idea of a categorized hipster for bicycling. Thank you for that story. And if your son can do it in Ottawa, Montreal, I mean, like, I guess what is our excuse here? Leah, what do you make of the categories of bicyclists? Hipster would probably be a fair one.
Yeah, yeah. I don't. That word might be expired at this point, though. It's kind of like girl boss. Yeah, I don't think we're really.
I'm a fair weather cyclist.
So you're a fair weather cyclist. Yeah. Okay.
Barely in the summer, even.
I don't own a bike.
You're the occasional cyclist. You're the.
I go to spin class. Wannabe. Yes. I really am just outing myself in this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift.
Spin class.
Vampires.
I like to stay fit. The reason I don't own a bike is because they keep getting stolen from my building, and so I didn't want to buy one and then have it stolen.
All right, we're really late for our break. We got to take this break. We got the team from City Magazine here. Hope that you've got the newest issue of City, their year closing issue here, and we're taking a look through and talking to some of the people featured in this outstanding publication. We'll come right back with them next.
I'm Jasmine Singer in for Evan Dawson. Wednesday on Connections, we start with a tech twist, unraveling digital fluency for the tech savvy and the tech terrified alike. Then in hour two, psychologist Dr. Melanie Joy enlightens us on how to end injustice everywhere, which also happens to be the title of her new book. Savvy tech tips and insights on becoming a more effective advocate for change. That's Wednesday on Connections.
This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Right there in the heart of the new edition of City Magazine is a piece from Jess Pavia called Pull Up a Chair, meeting the founder of Mackenzie's Table in Crosby Lane. And before we bring in Mackenzie Picoretto, Leah Stacey, you want to tell us a little bit about this piece here?
Yeah, so I can't speak to it quite the way that Jess would, but I did assign this piece and have been following Mackenzie for a number of years since she moved back here from Brooklyn. And she has kind of a two-pronged business, Mackenzie's Table, which she has this great Instagram presence and then also does private chef gigs, and then Crosby Lane, which is her sort of retail straight-to-consumer. She does like pickup orders, essentially, that she makes out of a commercial kitchen. And I've ordered some of the stuff, and it's delicious and helps you eat more clean, which I'll let her explain.
Well, Mackenzie, welcome. Thanks for making time for us. How are you?
I'm great. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great. So Leah kind of gave that little intro, but before we kind of we go through what you're doing now, set the story a little bit from, I think, maybe 2016 forward when you did move back here, and really how you progressed in this direction to do what you're doing now.
Yeah, so Leah pretty much hit the nail on the head of like the two prongs that I'm doing now, but it kind of was a slow build, as I think a lot of things are. So like you said, I moved back from New York in 2016, and I started my blog then as just a way to sort of share recipes, my version of health or what that means, healthy eating, and kind of as just a creative outlet. So I was working full-time in sales and just kind of doing that for fun weekly. And then it kind of snowballed from there. I was like, thought of doing a pop-up dinner and thought I could put my spin on sort of a seasonal and local approach to food. So started doing 5-course pop-up dinners at Living Roots, and then more notably at Jackrabbit Club for a longer period, and kind of really went from there. People asked if I could do it in their house, and I was like, well, yeah, I could do the same thing in your home, and COVID hit. So did some private chef gigs during COVID, which worked out, but ultimately sort of ended up forming into what I do now, which is mostly private chefing, and then, as Leah said, out of my same commercial kitchen, operating like a virtual or ghost kitchen as well.
I love this little bit of inspiration, and because Leah Stacey's been outing herself the whole hour, I will out myself. Okay, so obviously I spent a lot of time in the Finger Lakes and did some writing in the Finger Lakes. I've never been to FLX Table.
Wait, what?
Oh my
I
God.
Know.
Even I've been there.
I know. I've never been, and it's on.
You must go.
It's on my favorite street in the world.
Yes.
You know, so
charming.
And for you, Mackenzie, I know that that was a bit of inspiration.
Yeah.
What moved you about that experience?
Yeah, so I had always wanted to go there, of course, have heard about it, and nothing but wonderful things. It was my 30th birthday, which is just about exactly 5 years ago. And so went there with a group of close friends and was inspired not only by the meal, but just the take on the ever-changing and surprise aspect of the menu. So you never knew what the menu was going to be. And aside from telling them your allergies, and I'm, you know, trying to accommodate, you didn't know what you were going to have. And so I kind of had this inspiration of loving the idea of local and seasonal produce and meats, but also putting my spin on it, which really is the idea that healthy food can also be delicious and not boring. So I try to marry those two things with, yes, this just happens to be good for you, but first and foremost, it's just good, period. And so they're also doing that. Of course, their food's wonderful, but I wanted to kind of put my take on it. So yeah, that acted as sort of this inspiration for the first event. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to put some tickets online and see who buys them. And they did. And that really just didn't stop.
So you're doing 4 to 5 a month now?
Currently, yeah. So the pop-up model was more once a month. That was at Jackrabbit Club. And that would be a lot of strangers coming together, similar to FLX, where you could be a couple, you could be a group of 8 friends. There were about 20 tickets total. So that was the once a month situation. And then with COVID, of course, things had shifted. So currently, yes, I do about 4 to 6 a month. And that's in people's homes, so with their private kind of group of friends or family.
How do people find you?
Mostly online. Instagram is probably responsible for 90%+ of my business, so very grateful for that. But I think it's turned into a lot of referrals and word of mouth. Thankfully, I get a lot of repeat customers or, hey, I've been referred for my friend to dinner with you, because it's pretty unique. I think it offers people the ability to not leave their home and to host without the hosting duties or the dishes. And so there's a lot of reasons people would bring me in. It's usually around something celebratory.
So we've been talking about what Mackenzie does for Mackenzie's Table. Crosby Lane is doing some really interesting things now. As Leah said, mostly direct consumer, a lot of vegan, a lot of gluten free, but also in the new Pearson's Market. Is that right?
Yeah, we have a couple products there. Yeah.
So, which is for listeners, that's the old Glen Edith, which is the old Poor, which is on Elton Street, just off Park Avenue. It just opened, and it's only open till 3 p.m. I would like all coffee shops to be open later. That's my petition. Can we do a whole magazine issue on that, Leah Stacey?
Yes.
Yeah. Sure. If you buy all the ad space.
What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah. If you write it.
Oh. Are you commissioning this piece?
Yeah,
sure.
All right, Ryan has green-lighted it. I'm doing it.
But
Pearson's
overruled.
Pearson's is a cool space, and you'll find some products there. How would you describe what you're doing with Crosby now?
Yeah, so we kind of, again, have two little prongs, I guess, in Crosby Lane. So half of it is sort of more market items. So I do a lot of hummuses, jams, granola, different vegan cheeses, different spreads, things of that nature. Easy things that people can add to their meals weekly. So sort of just components of meals. And then the other side is more of kind of the quote bakery. And I say quote because a lot of my baked goods are actually like no bake desserts. So I'm not a baker, which is very much a science, and that's not my strong suit. So I make a ton of healthy, better for you. A lot of them happen to be vegan, gluten-free or dairy-free desserts, and really catering to a lot of the people that either for allergy reasons or just dietary reasons avoid certain foods and still want to have delicious desserts that are a little bit better for you. So that operates like a ghost kitchen where people pick up every single week. They can order online. The menu opens every weekend, and then the following week they would come and pick up their order.
All right. So how are people going to find you now? What's the easiest way to get in touch with you?
Yeah, so mackenziestable.com, all one word. That is where you'll find kind of all information, including Crosby Lane. And then also Instagram is mackenzies_table.
Good luck to you.
Thanks so much.
Mackenzie, if you're doing what you want to do in the next 3 to 5 years, what do you think it looks like?
Oh, my God, that's a great question. We could be here all day. Still figuring that out. That's kind of the fun of it, I guess, is the virtual kitchen's been a way for me to dip my toe in and kind of see if it has legs. I'd love to potentially have a space of my own where I can host my own dinners there and have people come in and get a feel of a space, which is so much of being out and about. Right now, of course, I'm just sort of in a kitchen and then outside, you know, giving people orders. So we'll see where that goes.
Mackenzie Picoretto, thanks for making time for us. And
thanks so much.
Cool story. All right. Thanks, Mackenzie. And Leah, that's, to me, this is, Ryan, this is what you guys do so well. You find these really interesting people and stories that, you know, frankly, this has really popped up since the pandemic, and it might be under the radar, and now it's right there on your radar. So thanks for this one here. I've not been over to Pearson's, by the way. Have you guys been over to Pearson's? No? Ryan,
yes.
No? Leah, yes, because Leah's been everywhere. Ryan, no?
Yeah, I wrote about them in the last issue.
I know. I haven't been, and I've tried to go there with a friend recently, and they were closed earlier than I thought.
I saw some pictures of their breakfast sandwich, which looks great.
Yeah. But
field trip.
3 o'clock field trip. Close is tough.
It might not be that way forever.
For a guy with a 2 o'clock out for the talk show. Hey, let's continue here. We're talking to, let's make it all about my needs, Rochester. We're talking to the team from City Magazine. Leah Stacey, Ryan Williamson are with us. And the newest edition contains a piece from Daniel Kushner called Hip Hop Don't Stop. And we're going to welcome in Dr. Ian Wilson in a moment here. What do you want us to know about this piece coming in here, Leah Stacey, Ryan Williamson?
You want me to take this?
Yeah, it's the 50-year anniversary.
It is the 50th.
Hip-hop.
Yeah, and we got kind of an eclectic...
And also Ian.
And yeah, Ian, exactly. And that was kind of the eclectic pitch. And I know Ian through several other people. We're kind of like in the same like arts circles. I don't know him very well personally, but, you know, I've reported on and followed Wall Therapy for a long time, have interviewed him for sure. And I just thought it was kind of a cool connection, like a non-traditional way to look at the anniversary. And I knew that he would have some really insightful things to say. So I'm happy with where this story landed, and I do think he had some insightful things to say.
Dr. Ian Wilson is the founder of Wall Therapy, is with us now. Hi, Dr. Wilson.
Good afternoon, folks. How you doing?
It's an honor to have you, sir, and happy 50th this year. Thanks for making time for the program today.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Good to be here.
50 years of Ian Wilson, 50 years of hip-hop. I love that little tie there. I know you said you grew up within hip-hop culture. Can you describe a little bit about growing up and what that culture was like in your memory?
Sure, sure. So I was raised in Brooklyn, East New York, Brooklyn, which is kind of the border between Brooklyn and Queens. And I have an older brother, 8 years senior, who was the neighborhood DJ. He was a graffiti writer. And so you can imagine me being a kindergartner, my brother in eighth grade, kind of tagging along these older kids and, you know, hearing what they're talking about and, you know, seeing it after school. You know, my brother and I went to the same school for a year. And before we went to high school, and I went to first grade. And then, so after school, he'd basically take the house speakers, put them in the window, and play music for the neighborhood, you know. And that was like 1978 or so, 79. And, you know, being right there in the nucleus of all of this, which is interesting, you know, from our frame of reference, it didn't seem like we were anywhere else but our neighborhood. Right. I mean, it wasn't until later that you see hip hop and the thing that we were taking for granted as like everyday life being something that the whole world was celebrating. You know, that didn't become apparent until actually seeing a breakdance battle with the Rocksteady Crew, New York City Breakers. That was on PBS, you know, long time ago. And hearing people talk about it and realizing that, you know, this thing is actually bigger, you know, than we thought, you know, and you hear coverage of hip hop in the media you realize that this is something else, you know, but it's regular everyday life for us.
Yeah. And I have to say there's some really producer Megan Mack highlighted a few things in particular that I want to touch on from this piece. Mm-hmm. And I want to read some of what Dr. Wilson told City Magazine here, because, you know, Ian, you said that in many ways, wall therapy might not exist if not for the graffiti of New York City. Some of the artistic expression that happened in different ways happened because people needed a release valve in very, very tough life circumstances. And I want to read a couple of the things that you told City. You said, quote, "One of the most miraculous things about hip hop is that it grew out of seemingly infertile ground. What was fertile was the diversity of people who made up the soil. So while the conditions weren't favorable, there were elements still present in that environment that made something like hip hop possible. Positivity, hope for a better future, the need to celebrate what you had, even if you didn't have much," end quote. And then you went on to say this, quote, "Usually when people are in tough situations, they don't create something that is beautiful while they're in those circumstances, while they're just trying to survive, while they're trying to stay safe, while they're trying to feed their families. In the hierarchy of needs, the base of the pyramid has to be satisfied first before you can build anything," end quote. Really remarkable stuff there. Can you just elaborate a little bit on some of those themes, Dr. Wilson?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, if you think about during the time of late 60s, early 70s, when New York City was in complete disarray, I don't know if a lot of listeners have an appreciation for where New York City was at the time. I mean, the borough of the Bronx was literally burning. I mean, you know, there were, you know, situations where people just let buildings burn, and because there weren't the public resources to pull out of them out, you know, and so buildings are burning. The city was in fiscal disrepair, and out of that time came a gift that was given to the world by the youth of New York City. Which, if you think about, like how would that happen? How would kids, you know, give the world something that would change it indelibly out of those circumstances? This is absolutely miraculous, you know, to think that kids from all walks of life, you know, whether they were, you know, largely, you know, Afro-Caribbean, Puerto Rican, white, you know, you had a whole host of people, you know, who contributed to the foundations of various aspects of hip-hop culture, you know, from all socioeconomic backgrounds, largely disadvantaged, but not all of them. You know, you have some pretty well-off kids from the Upper East Side who were undeniably brilliant, you know, at graffiti, you know, and contributed to the culture in a way that no one could ever besmirch. You know, you just can't deny that what was given to the world was the result of so many different people. You know, it wasn't just the Black experience. It wasn't just the Puerto Rican experience. It wasn't just the overall Caribbean experience. It wasn't just the Upper East Side, Upper West Side, but a combination of people from all over New York, all sectors of New York City, is what, you know, became hip-hop. And so that's what we're celebrating.
Well, I want to let listeners know that Daniel Kushner is going to host an hour of music program coming up on December 22nd, and they will be focusing on the anniversary, 50th anniversary of hip-hop on that program. Dr. Wilson, time's tight. I just want to ask you, as the founder of Wall Therapy, what is next for you?
Well, that's a very good question. We're going to think about things more programmatically, more project-oriented. I think we've seen the heyday of the week-long festival has kind of run its course. But, you know, there may be some one-off projects coming up in the future. We'll keep you posted.
Really appreciate your insight here. Thank you very, very much. We look forward to the next conversation.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
That's the remarkable Dr. Ian Wilson, the founder of Wall Therapy. Just the quotations alone in that piece, Ryan, sometimes pieces got to come in and you got to go, this person just speaks in profundities.
Yeah, I had so many good pull quotes to choose from. It was almost a problem.
Yeah, truly. Outstanding work there. And we're going to close the hour. I love the theme of this. Making Spiritless Bright is the name of a piece from Elise Martinez. And Elise, a contributor to City, is with us. Elise, welcome. Thanks for making time.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
So we're talking mocktails or zero-proof cocktails. Real quick, do you want to weigh in on the debate about what to call these things? No alcohol cocktails. What do you like, Elise?
Yes, I like mocktails. I think that even though it's widely used, it's more recognizable, and they can just be fun.
So what you do is you're giving us a chance to understand different locations around town, different products you can get. I really, really like this idea. Had friends over recently that two people and a couple, one drinks alcohol, the other does not. And it's really valuable to have your own little option at home to create. So I'm trying to get my own go-tos for zero-proof cocktails or mocktails. But out around town, there's some options here. So kind of tell us a little bit about the story and what you want people to know.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was really inspired to write this story, one, because I don't drink. And it was really interesting to just start to explore Rochester because they have such a robust offering, you know, of quality bars and restaurants. And we need something in between sparkling grape juice and O'Doul's. You know, like, it's okay if you like those things.
O'Doul's.
But, you know, like, we want more, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I started to look around at different restaurants, and this is not an exhaustive list, but I was really surprised to find Red is one that came up because they, to me, are such a high-end option. They actually have a whole menu of mocktails that they have, and one that I really love there is called Don't Call Me Shirley, which is a play on the Shirley Temple, but it's more adult, so I really love that. But you don't need to just go out to dinner, right? We want options to, if I want to say, let's go for drinks, mm-hmm. and I don't want to drink, I love Carmel Bakery on Park Ave. That's one of my number one locations for something that offers mocktails and dessert pairings. So it's a great place to go for a friend date, a regular date, just to go hang at the bar and be able to have that bar experience without having to drink alcohol. But it's just so many options from kombucha to Just Juice, which are more traditional, not necessarily mocktails, but alternatives to going out for drinks or coffee.
Elise, I think of this a little bit like I think of the evolution of vegan options on menus, whereas, you know, a decade or more ago, restaurants may have kind of they might call it a veto item. You know, you don't want a group of people to veto a restaurant if there's no vegan option. So they had one dish and maybe it wasn't much of a focus. And now there's multiple options at a lot of the best restaurants, a lot of restaurants, and they're well thought out. They're careful and it's good stuff. I wonder if Zero Proof is going in this direction where the more and more bars and restaurants you go to, you'll be able to ask for it and they will have multiple options. What do you think?
Oh, I absolutely think. I mean, the data is showing that too. I mean, just to do this piece, I wanted to be able to back up my work just besides my own experience. So I did pull some, you know, some stats from International Wine and Spirits Research, and, you know, its valuation is over $11 billion just for 2022 for the non-alcoholic sector. But it's just going to keep growing because that's what consumers want. And I think the most interesting thing about it is that we're not just seeing people that might have like a health issue or a pregnancy or have alcohol use disorder that want to have these options.
Yeah.
It's people that drink and just
yes.
want to be able to go out and not have that alcoholic feeling or that buzz.
I could not agree more. I mean, I think it's a really healthy and good development and frankly, really creative. So 30 seconds before we let you go, do you have a favorite in town, a favorite drink?
Oh my gosh. At home, I'm going to go for at home.
Yep.
My favorite drink is a ginger lemon spritz. It's ginger, lemon, ginger beer, and a pinch of fine sea salt.
That's pretty good. I like it. I'm going to go with a sparkling almond, which is orgeat, which is just the almond syrup with fresh squeezed lemon and any number of, sort of flavored seltzer waters you could choose or sparkling waters. So sparkling water, orgeat, lemon. They call it a sparkling almond. I love that one. It's very summery.
That's delicious.
So congratulations on this piece, Elise. It's great stuff. Thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Making Spiritless Bright. That's a great, whose headline is that, guys? That's you, Leah. Ryan pointed at you.
That wasn't me.
Making Spiritless Bright. That's like the second you got it, you're like, yep, we got a headline. That's perfect. Stuck the landing. Congratulations on another awesome edition of City, guys.
Thank you.
Really nice. So you can find it wherever City is sold.
Free.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's not sold. Wherever City is free.
Grab a handful.
And there is a finder map on our website.
And the website is?
RockCityMag.com.
RockCityMag.com. Leah Stacy, thank you.
Thanks as always.
Ryan Williamson, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nice ink, by the way. And thanks to all of the wonderful guests from City. The magazine's phenomenal. Hope you check it out. Listeners, we've got much more Connections tomorrow. Have a great day.